Welcome to the Food Fans interview from Frog Hop. James Haggerty founded Presto Coffee in 2018 when he was 23 years old. And he founded it with the belief that coffee drinkers shouldn't have to choose between great taste and sustainability. And he wanted to make that as accessible as possible. The Presto journey takes in production technology and responsible sourcing. And I'm looking forward to finding out how James is balancing those various aims. Growing and establishing a new brand in a competitive category, managing and supporting his partners and farmers, innovating the roasting and production processes, and lots more. Welcome, James.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us how Presto came to be and what inspired you to start the business?
Amazing. Yeah, I think coming at that with the second part of the question first, inspiration has always been that I'm just a massive coffee lover. Loved it since a young age. I've always wanted to try new coffees from different origins, different strengths, different profiles. And yeah, I still drink far too much coffee every single day now. Definitely guilty of that, although there are some now caffeine alternatives, which we can dive into to replace that. But yeah, always been a big coffee drinker. And Presto was kind of born out of the frustration of the speciality market. And for us, the speciality market feels like a closed group for consumers. And unless you have the fancy V60 dripper or a couple of hundred quid bean to cup machine, drinking speciality coffee is by that kind of cohort. And so we wanted to bridge that gap between everyday value coffee that you might buy in a supermarket or in a farm shop and that speciality market. So all of our coffee is Rainforest Alliance certified. All of our coffee is speciality grade. We're just at an entry level price point for customers to trade up from their supermarket coffee right up to something a bit more premium.
I buy a few beans myself, but I don't always see instant options with the people I buy from.
Yeah, no, we're quite unique in that sense. We're actually championing our barista grade instant coffee at the moment more so than our other range. We're just really excited that instant coffee hasn't had a challenger brand really challenge the conglomerates of the category with something new and dynamic. Instant coffee famously is kind of the poorer end of quality in the coffee industry. And the majority of the brands out there pack 90 or 95%+ robusta grade coffee into that instant coffee, which naturally tastes bitter and dark roasted and has those notes of tobacco and smoke. And for us, we kind of looked at the instant coffee market and said, well, why can't we challenge the blend profiles of these instant coffees and come in with a 100% Arabica or an 80-20 split of Arabica to Robusta to try and copy what the high street brands are doing with a Pret or a Costa coffee on the high street might be 80% Arabica, 20% Robusta. Why isn't that an instant coffee? So that's what we've done. And our instant coffee is flying at the moment, which is really exciting. We got nominated by The Independent for the last 3 years in a row for our coffee being the best tasting. So I think we're onto a little bit of a niche market within instant coffee of trying to trying to tease out that premium consumer in a very old school market.
And what were you doing before? You know, were you working in food drink sector?
Always had a passion for food and drink. I entered my career started as this online world, Amazon D2C was kind of emerging, which was really exciting for me. Decided to niche down into Amazon specifically, which has then broadened out more into D2C and now retail. But yeah, I was working in a number of different food and drink brands to try and increase their D2C and Amazon sales. And I love food and drink. The people in it are I think, what makes it unique. That's kind of where I started.
Did you set out with a kind of sense that you wanted to change something about the coffee industry? What are the things you think are, if not broken, then could be improved?
We kind of set out as a business to really focus on the sustainability aspects of coffee. And when you live and breathe it, there's just so much ambiguity around what makes a cup of coffee really sustainable. And there are so many touch points that cup of coffee has gone through to get to your cup. And so for us, being a challenger brand, we couldn't just focus on having sustainability as the cornerstone of our business. We kind of see that as a byproduct of all the goodness that we do. We're B Corp, as I mentioned, RFA. All of our packaging is recyclable. We've got plans to kind of push the boundaries on packaging in the next 6 to 12 months, which is being championed by some of our retail listings. And so we've kind of shifted from sustainability being our core focus to just being the kind of foundation of our business. And hopefully moving forward, startups should have that kind of grounding that you should be as environmentally friendly as you can possibly be. I guess what makes us really different and what our ambition is to change is to upgrade people's daily drinking habits from instant coffee and coffee bags, for example, to a more premium experience, so that they are drinking better quality, better sourced, and are ultimately far more tastier coffee in those convenience packs formats.
Excellent. And from looking through the website, it sounds like the roasting and preparation process is a pretty crucial area. You know, there's one thing creating a coffee brand and roasting, yep, and brewing and all that sort of stuff. It's another to change the production process. How early in the journey was that the focus?
Yeah, I guess it comes from social pressures on for a challenger brand working with a roastery. How can we create enough of a push for them to fund and innovate, and their engineers to look at the most advanced tech? And it was probably really good timing that the roastery that we moved to 4 years ago were championing that sustainability agenda. That's not to say that we haven't pushed it, and we've encouraged them to try different packaging types and more recyclable packaging formats. But ultimately, I think we don't have the buyer power to persuade roasters on the scale that we're roasting at to implement better roasting techniques. It's just the ambition on the roaster's side to move to a more green tech, and we've been very lucky that the roasters that we use are very forward thinking in terms of their sustainability. So I think they have Europe's most advanced catalytic converter. They save about 80% of carbon emissions from going out into the atmosphere. They have a pressurized recirculation technology, so that in the winter, like freezing outside now, all of the hot emissions from the roaster is being funneled right throughout the roastery to keep it warm. I guess we've been very lucky in the roaster that we moved to have been very forward thinking.
Excellent. And similarly, you've made strides to make sure the packaging is recyclable and sustainable.
Yeah. Oh, I love talking about packaging. It's so nerdy, and at the end of the day, do customers really lie there at night worrying about the pack of coffee being recyclable or compostable? And I think there is some interesting moves in the market around compostability, and do customers fully understand what industrial compostability versus in your home garden compostability really is? And so for us, we've always believed that the most simple option for the consumer should be the one that we adopt. And so we have explored compostable packaging before, but the messaging on pack is so confusing that we've just stripped it right back. So all of our packaging goes in your green bin at home, so it has the best chance of being recycled.
Obviously, sourcing the beans, I guess, is probably the big one. But how do you work with farmers and suppliers?
Yeah, so in the beginning, we had this narrative that we wanted to source from 4 or 5 independent smallholding farms that could provide us with this delicious organic coffee. And the reality of a fast-moving D2C business is that there are fluctuations in sales velocity. And the time that we started Presto was about 6 months before COVID rocked up, or no, about a year before COVID rocked up. And so we were trying to source a small amount of coffee and trying to advertise that to a large audience. And what we found is, in terms of scalability, being able to to buy from independent farms was really difficult for us. And so what we decided to do was that the next best option for us in terms of sourcing was to be verified Rainforest Alliance. And so all of the farms that we now buy our coffee from, 100% verified Rainforest Alliance. And that's kind of our way as a small business with very limited employees to make sure that we are sourcing from the best quality farms that allow us to scale in terms of quantity of coffee kind of over time. So we're big supporters of the Rainforest initiative. We ring fence that supply.
And you've done all that while winning awards for the taste of your coffees, I think including 2 stars with Great Taste Awards. How have you balanced these challenges?
I think what we found the most challenging point around taste and profiles is you've just got to be laser focused on who your target cohort, who your target customer is, because everyone by age bracket has a different preference when it comes to coffee. Like, we've seen those millennial drinkers sitting in fancy looking coffee shops in London really enjoy a bitter coffee, because predominantly we drink, as a nation, we drink cappuccinos and lattes over espressos or black Americanos. So for that, if you're targeting that kind of cohort of customers, you do need a lot of blend work to make sure that bitterness of that coffee is coming through. Those customers prefer 100% Arabica, or maybe a 90% Arabica, 10% Robusta blend to kind of hit what they're looking for. The other end of the market, which is the instant drinkers, the kind of 55 plus, prefer a kind of full-bodied, slightly darker roast instant coffee that they can drink black if they want it, or with milk. And the challenge for us is building out a range that is focused enough for us as a small team to be able to give the love and attention, but also broad enough to kind of cater for that broad customer base. And so lots of our tastings is done by some of our investors and board members who they have a experience in the coffee industry and have kind of been integral for us to those tastings and those profiles. But I think if I could go back and start Presto again, I would from day one find that cohort of customers that you are going after, create a WhatsApp group, create an email list, whatever it is, get those 20 or 30 brand evangelists to be tasting your coffee on a weekly basis. And if the overwhelming majority of your target audience in this cohort isn't enjoying the coffee, then there's something wrong. You need to kind of tweak those blends. I think for us, we launched on Amazon to begin with. We were selling to a massive spectrum of different ages and types, and based our improvements on the reviews that we were getting in. And I think the danger there is you just spread yourself too thin with creating too many listings.
Going slightly off topic, I confess I've moved to caffeine-free beans. You mentioned there's different options in that space.
So there's a couple of different options. I think there's 3 options. One is a chemical route to decaf your beans, and they use a very strong acid to strip the caffeine away from the green beans. This is pre-roasting. The next is a CO2 process where air is pumped into a tank and the beans naturally decaf over time. And then there is a Swiss water process as well, which is far more premium, far more expensive, kind of associated with the speciality end of the market, but you can kind of guarantee a chemical-free option. And so for us, as a foundation, we've always had a decaf across every format that we sell. I think what's really exciting is this new emerging trend of, you see it across loads of different industries, but the health focused around coffee. For us, we launched a half caffeine instant coffee, which was exclusively taken by Cardo in January of this year. For those customers who are wanting less caffeine in their diet because of the health benefits that are associated with drinking less caffeine or having less caffeine, but still want a little hit in the afternoon or late morning to kind of carry them through until they either drink tea in the afternoon or something stronger. So Yeah, for us, focusing on that innovation and being able to support our customers' needs through different caffeine options is something that we're really passionate about and have future plans to continue to innovate in.
I'll be honest, before I switched, I kind of thought caffeine free was cheating and you weren't really drinking coffee, but I've been pleasantly surprised by the taste that you can achieve.
Yeah, it's especially modern day speciality coffee, that's, you know, Swiss water, you can't tell the difference.
Can you just summarize what's currently in the range and kind of which came first, or did you launch with a few things?
Yeah, so we've always been a bit different in the way the range is structured. Coffee is so complex with different origins, altitudes, flavor profiles. How does a customer navigate that range? And so we're really proud to kind of champion occasion-led coffee drinking. So we've got four occasions. One is when you first wake up in the morning, and you just want that caffeine hit to get you out of bed, to get you into the office, to get you out in the car, whatever that might be. And that's our espresso intenso. And that is right now it's a 100% Robusta blend. It's quite dark roasted, but it will give you the punch that you need to get to work or out and about. The second blend is then from about 10 o'clock through to maybe like 12 o'clock. And that is your house espresso. That is a blend that is smooth, delicate, velvety, you know, a real treat to the taste buds. And that is an 80-20 Arabica to Robusta. And that is very similar to the type of coffee that you get from your high street coffee vendors. Kind of moving throughout the day, then you've got your mid-afternoon, late-afternoon coffee drinker. We've all been there, that kind of mid-afternoon lull. That's where your half caffeine comes in. So 50% decaf, 50% caffeinated. That is made up of 80% Arabica, 20% Robusta. And that is just a really nice, smooth coffee to kind of ease you into the evening without keeping you up all night with jitters. And then as you go into the evening or late afternoon, you got your decaf coffee for those caffeine conscious consumers. It's a bit unorthodox, but we're a data business, and these are just kind of the time slots that we see our customers drinking the coffee.
Are there other products or formats or categories that would make, well, that you've got plans to expand into?
At the moment, we're focusing on instant coffee and coffee bags. That's where our main focus is. The cold brew space is always really exciting. We're keen to explore that. We're also looking at a strategic partnership with an alcohol brand at the moment about an espresso martini and some innovation there. So hopefully building on the range that's working at the moment, but as with any new product development, it takes time and resource, and it pulls you away from ultimately our goal of upgrading those instant coffee consumers.
Popping back to the data, you mentioned the time of day. Do you have a kind of customer profile that you're targeting as well, or an age profile?
Yeah, so we kind of pride ourselves on targeting that older consumer. I'm a millennial, and I know that many businesses see the challenges in acquiring millennial customers. They're a difficult breed to get, less loyal than slightly older consumers, want more content, want more discounts. So we've tested targeting different cohorts of people, and I think the cohort of the over 40s is something that really works with Presto and trying to become that household brand to those customers. You know, more brand loyal, more disposable income, and ultimately with our convenience, instant and coffee bags, a kind of more narrowly defined product range for them to shop.
How well do customers understand the compromises that you're rejecting through things like sustainability and the production processes and supporting farmers and Rainforest Alliance? Does it matter to them?
It's a really interesting question, and we've actually got some like live data to support that. We sent out a survey this week asking about what's most important on pack, that kind of hierarchy of sustainability questions. And for us, and for me, I really care about low carbon or being carbon neutral, but does that really resonate with the over 40? So I think we put a list of 15 different sustainability kind of terms, from low carbon to carbon neutral to B Corp certified to Rainforest Alliance. And interestingly, the top three of those, for this is a customer aged over 40, number one was plastic free, which you don't really necessarily associate with coffee. British business was number two, which is really interesting. And then B Corp was number three. So for the target demographic that we're looking to go after, perhaps carbon neutrality and carbon offsetting is not a primary focus when they're buying coffee. That's going to be different for every single industry. But for us, coffee is a big carbon contributor, and roasting is carbon intense, farming is carbon intense, and shipping is carbon intense. And then you boil a kettle, which is, you know, carbon intense. And it's always been our aim to reduce or offset as much carbon as we can possibly do. But pivoting to this slightly older consumer, that's not necessarily what's driving that buying preference for them. So it's super interesting. You've only got a limited amount of space on pack to convey that message. So our website does do a lot of the heavy lifting. But I think just being able to communicate that we're trying our best and doing what's within our power to become more green is what we try and communicate to our customers as best as possible.
Can I ask how you funded the business so far?
Yeah, so a lot of it came from an initial set of investors. And then I think since starting the business, we've done three or four investment rounds. So yeah, private investors, majority.
How easy was it to find the right investors?
I think that we have been lucky that the investors that we have on board have been able to support the business on multiple rounds, which is not always the case. I think we found it really hard during Brexit, COVID, and cost of living to raise money. Naturally, when there's low confidence in the wider market, it has been a challenge to raise money. I think now that Presto has kind of emerged as a brand and is starting to now feel more like a brand in the marketplace with verification from supermarket listings, being able to have those investment conversations is a lot easier. And I think if I was to start Presto over again tomorrow from scratch, I would focus on getting one key supermarket listing over the line in the first year or 18 months, because there is no better verification in the market for an investor that you have a supermarket listing, in my opinion. Yeah. And you know, it's a really, really good dynamic website that converts customers into subscription. And when we were first launched, probably the first 18 months was just on Amazon. And when you've got the majority of your income stream coming from one channel, and Amazon is a tricky platform to work with and on, both margin and customer wise, it just makes it quite hard to get an investor excited about something that's tangible and has purpose and meaning when they can't physically go and see the product or touch it. That's my experience. It might be different for everyone else.
So you started on Amazon.
Yeah.
How did your sales channels kind of roll out from there?
Yep. So we started on Amazon. I traded on there for about 18 months. It was just me running the business at the time. And then we launched our website. It's very, very simple range. I think we had four or five 1 kilo bags on the website. Group kind of grew the team out at the same time. And then we launched into two wholesalers, which was a really interesting time for the business, because the business model had always been set up to work D2C and Amazon, and there was quite a big shift to be able to move to wholesale. And then I just naively thought that you secure a wholesaler and you kind of leave it and the orders come rolling in. That's just not the case. You have to work really hard with wholesalers, make sure that they've got all the support that they need, and then the end consumers who they're selling to, making sure that they have all of the resource that they need, you know, supporting them with tastings, with site visits, you know, showing them the love. Because ultimately that's what makes Presto and all these other challenger brands different, is that we're challenging the conglomerates because we can go and do tastings. We can go and look at the buyer in the eyes and show them the passion. So that was a big learning curve. So it went Amazon, website, wholesale, and now retail.
And how big is the team? You mentioned you started when you were on Amazon, it was just yourself. How has the team scaled, and what things are in-house versus out-house, and have you got plans to change the way that's set up?
Yeah, so we've always been lean. And so we have 3 full-time employees right now, and about 3 or 4 different consultants supporting the business from different areas. We've got one agency managing some online parts at the moment, and then we've just got the most incredible background staff, if you will, of advisors and investors who support the business. And there's about 8 or 9 in total who kind of all muck in at different levels. So whilst the team is only 3, maybe 4, 4.5 really, of full-time and part-time employees, we're probably a team of 15 or 16 who keep the lights on from all different perspectives, from, you know, actually fixing the Amazon listings to then organizing a mass sampling of 150 people at a kind of a 2-week notice. So yeah, I would say full-time 4, kind of max 15.
And you mentioned being a B Corp, and a lot of people who've been on the podcast have in the B Corp community. How did you find the process, and is it something you'd advise other businesses to kind of get on board with?
Yeah, I love that we're a B Corp. It was the hardest process that we went through. Honestly, it was so tricky. And I think if any advice for any business that's going for the B Corp award is just start early, because the more processes, the more employees you have, the more complex your business is, the more difficult that B Corp process is. And then I don't know how many points we got off the top of my head, maybe like 98. I would then structure the team over a year and a half period, or maybe even a 2-year period. You've got to think long term with B Corp. And try and get 1 to 2 points a week, if that's possible. We started off by saying, right, I want everyone to spend 3 or 4 hours of their week going through each of these B Corp processes to build out that score. And that was just the wrong way of doing it, because people get burnt out. You know, they're trying to do their existing roles whilst also looking at new roles. And I think as well, As you go through this process, the process is designed to shape the business. You're not trying to retrofit your business to suit B Corp. I mean, the process is there, so you build out the process to become that sustainable or more sustainable brand. But you know, it's brilliant that we've got the processes in place. We joke internally that we had a whistleblowing process in place before we had 100 customers. Whether or not that's a good thing, from the ground up, we've always believed that that's the right thing to do. And I think the other thing about B Corp is, once you get it, it's really then easy to not improve the score. But I think it's a really good exercise to be talking about it on a quarterly basis, and trying to get 1 or 2 points a year towards that, you know, trying to improve your score. With anything, once you've got it, it's really easy to then drop off. And so we're still having those conversations and trying to improve that score. But yeah, advice is start early and take your time with it.
Is there anything you wish you could go back and tell yourself earlier in the life of the business that would have saved you, you know, stress, time, missed opportunities?
Yeah, I would go back and try and tell myself to enjoy the process a little bit more. Everyone wants to become the next big thing, and everyone has ambitions of getting multiple supermarket listings. and international listings and that kind of that brand success. Success is what you make it. And for me, I kind of started wanting that, you know, every single supermarket listing, and getting Presto into as many shops as possible. But what really summed it up to me is I was doing a sampling in Booths about 8 weeks ago now, and we were brewing up our new instant coffee, and you're there, you know, on the front line talking to those customers, tasting your coffee. And there was this woman that ran across the supermarket. I promise you, she ran across the supermarket because she could smell our coffee. And she was like, wow, that smells delicious. Can I please try it? And I think I wish I had done samplings like that in the first 6 months of the business, like you see most startups doing. And I guess that's the beauty of being a retail and D2C rather than D2C only for a period of time. The verification in the market that what you're doing is making people's lives better is the biggest motivator for any food and drink founder. So that's what I think I would do differently.
Do you worry that doing things like that will be harder, like personally for you as you scale the business up?
How do you mean?
And like taking the time to go and do the sampling in Booths and meet the customers and...
I think as a founder, when your 9-to-5 isn't defined, I think if you prioritize speaking to those customers, getting the data to make your product and brand better, and if it means catching up on a few emails from 7 till 9 o'clock at night, that's the way I think I should have started the business. Anyone starting a business now, I'd be like, get out there. Everyone says it. Get out there, meet your customers, look them in the eyes, tell them that you're really passionate about your coffee or your product, and see what they have to say about it. We've got an instant coffee, we've got all of our branding, and then our kind of hierarchy towards the bottom of the pack as House Espresso in big, bold letters. House Espresso, then our flavor notes, and then it says instant coffee. And we signed that off. We printed X amount of 1,000 of tins, and then I was in Booths 8 weeks ago, and this 55-year-old woman came over to me, our perfect target demographic, and it took her about 10 seconds to realize that it was instant coffee. Because she looked at our branding, she looked at the name, she looked at the tasting notes, she looked at the side, and the smallest thing was instant coffee. And we could have just continued on the way our branding was positioned for the next 2 years and not picked up on that if we hadn't been out in the market verifying it. And a simple switch is to change the small instant coffee, change it with the big House Espresso. So the first thing on pack is instant coffee. We did the sampling again. Within about 2 seconds, she was like, oh, this instant coffee looks great. And there you go. So you've got to get out there and you've got to meet those people who are buying your product.
Every day is a school day, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much for that. That's been really interesting. And yeah, best of luck.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Brilliant. Thanks so much to James for joining us. You can find out more about Presto and buy online at prestocoffee.com. You can also buy on Amazon through Ocado, Booths, Zap, and at 100 pub sites across the UK. If you want to listen to previous Food Founders interviews, you can go to froghop.co.uk/podcast or search for Food Founders interviews wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what we're doing, please follow us or even give us a review. It all helps. Thanks very much and see you next time.